Support for 51% comes from Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a community-owned natural grocery store dedicated to sustainable agriculture, the local economy, and the environment, working within the community to better Berkshire County one basket at a time. Berkshire.coop.
On this week's 51%, we tune in to some of the sounds from a few of the many women's marches the day after the presidential inauguration.
I don't want to look back and say I could have done something, I should have done something. I think we all have a responsibility to make sure that everyone in this country is safe.
We learn about a network for women entrepreneurs 40 years and older, and hear about an Afghan woman's take on beauty. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
I can keep quiet.
That was part of a song by a Los Angeles singer-songwriter that was performed by a flash mob of women in pink pointy-eared hats at the Women's March on Washington. It is being heralded as the anthem of the movement. Milk, whose real name is Connie Lim, led some 24 singers in her song Quiet, which is about overcoming physical and sexual abuse. Film director Alma Harrell wrote on Facebook that she chanced upon the singers and captured footage of them performing. Her clip went viral. The song is part of a social media campaign for I Can't Keep Quiet, which hopes to raise awareness against abuse of women and minorities. Meanwhile, sister marches to the March on Washington, D.C. were held across the globe January 21st, from Boston to Budapest, from New York City to Nairobi. I went to one in the Hudson Valley region of New York, in Poughkeepsie, on the pedestrian bridge walkway over the Hudson. The band played at the Poughkeepsie entrance to walkway over the Hudson, sending off a river of participants in the Poughkeepsie Women's March across the Hudson. There were no other performers or speakers. Marchers carried mainly handmade signs of many slogans, sizes, and colors. Mary DeChristopher came from Ulster Park.
Super callous, fascist, racist, extra braggadocious. I stole it from the internet, but I thought it was very appropriate.
Why are you marching here today?
We march for women's rights and human rights. That's why. Because I don't want what progress we've made in the past 100 years to go backwards.
Kingston resident Dale Thompson marched alongside DeChristopher.
My sign says, girls just want to have fundamental human rights. And it also says, build bridges, not walls.
The latter slogan was ubiquitous, as was women's rights are human rights. Another sign read, girls just want to have funding for Planned Parenthood. And one said, ugh, where do I start? At least one poster thanked former President Barack Obama, and there was a sign urging Democratic Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren to run for president. Cornwall-on-Hudson Mayor Brendan Coyne participated.
Well, I'm here to show solidarity with the Women's March all across the country, and I think we need to demonstrate to show that we want civil rights to remain in our lives. Very scary what's going on in our country right now.
When her bus to the Women's March on Washington fell through, Poughkeepsie resident Lisa Cole says she and Paulina Bren decided to make an impact locally and some 2 weeks ago organized the Poughkeepsie Women's March across the Hudson. Here's Bren.
We wanted it to be on the walkway. We wanted to find a space that was truly democratic and inclusive and also sort of visually impactful.
Cole talks about what prompted her to organize.
I was astounded at the rhetoric during the election campaign, and I was not surprised at the outcome of the election, but I felt that for far too long people on the left had been quiet, and I felt this time was ripe for activism. As citizens, we have a duty and an obligation to our democracy, and it was time to stand up now, because if we didn't stand up now, our voices would never be heard.
Milton resident Shelley Tattlebaum hasn't hit the pavement in the name of activism since the 1960s.
I'm a grief therapist, and I am sad and grieving for our country right now.
Her sign read, 1960s hippie grandmother still marching now for peace, love, and equality.
Unfortunately, our equal rights, our civil rights are being challenged, and this is goosing us to get off our comfy asses
the old hippies and to march again for what we believe in, because we've become too comfortable, and that's what this is showing us, is that we have to become activists again. We can't sit back and just complain and talk.
Jared Hegenstaller, a fifth grader from Clinton Corners, says he was impressed by the turnout of thousands and proud to march with his friends.
I'm marching for women's rights because the country's in a very conflicted time after the recent election. So I think that we should march for civil rights to keep the country together, and we need to be strong and be together.
Claudia Jacobs from Goshen in Orange County attended.
The message is not to accept the unacceptable. And just to be in the moment, pay attention, and be aware of all the really negative changes that the new administration is making.
Wendy McNeil from Wappingers Falls participated.
I just feel that this new administration stands for everything that America is not. I think they're against diversity. I think they're against human rights. And we have to stand up for that. I don't want to look back and say I could have done something, I should have done something. I think we all have a responsibility to make sure that everyone in this country is safe.
And she says it will take continued effort to be heard.
We just have to keep being diligent and do whatever we can. Petitions, making people aware, stay on top of things, writing to congressmen, keeping things in the news, because that is a problem. You know, there's always sound bites. Everything's woo, 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 and then 2 weeks later, what happened? And it's our duty to stay on top of this and make sure that this is always in the public eye.
Marchers came from all over the Hudson Valley, as well as from out of state, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Several families marched, as did husbands whose wives were marching in Washington. On the West Coast, one of several marches was held in San Jose, California. It is being called the largest protest of any kind in the city's history. Mayor Sam Liccardo, in his Facebook post, estimated that up to 35,000 took part. Reporter Leslie Griffey spoke with a few marchers about what brought them into the streets.
I'm Claire, and I am 9 years old. And I'm here because I think that women's rights are very important, and I want younger kids to be able to grow up in a place where we don't have hate.
I'm Courtney Gacho. I'm 28. Love is love is love is love is love. There's no, absolutely no reason why we should be discriminating on people based on, you know, who they like.
My name is Amanda Morris, and I am 49. Obviously, voting is not enough. You also have to participate. And if something's not right, you have to stand up for yourself and for others.
Maricela, I'm 28 years old.
What'd you say?
I march for my immigrant grandmother, my migrant worker mother, my powerful sisters, my future daughters. We deserve more.
Yes, my name is Enrique Arguello. I'm 57 years old.
And why was it important for you to be here today?
To support all the rights, human rights, for gays, for immigrants, for you name it, right? So that's equal rights. I believe that there is only one race, it's human race.
We now turn to our 51% segment called Force of Nature from Dr. Sharon Ufberg. This week, she interviews Joanne Roberts, who is an entrepreneur, TV video producer, and new media pioneer. Roberts created and led the production of three award-winning TV series and numerous web communities in partnership with major media companies, including AOL, CBS, Nickelodeon, Fox, and PBS. Roberts' latest production is What Now, What Next, a collaborative network for women entrepreneurs 40 years and older, where they find the community connection, support, and expertise they need to launch and grow their ventures. Roberts is co-founder of What Now, What Next, and Ufberg asked what inspired it.
I started What Now, What Next about 2 years ago with my co-founder, Peggy Doyle. We were both in the process of reinventing our careers yet again and figuring out our own next steps. And a lot of our friends over 40 were in the same place in their lives, reinventing their careers too. Lots of our friends have either opted out or been downsized out or hit the glass ceiling in jobs that really no longer suited them. And they were all ready to follow their passions and pursue their dreams. And we all had had decades of experience, and we also all had some gaps in our knowledge. And interestingly, we discovered that we all knew something that the others didn't know. So we decided to get together, support each other, giving each other advice, getting advice, sharing stories and strategies and solutions. And it was really powerful for us to have the support of other like-minded women. And what Now What Next really grew out of those conversations, Sharon, we decided that we wanted to build a framework that would support other women like us across the country and across the world. And, you know, as you said, What Now What Next is a collaborative network where women connect with like-minded women, finding the community that they need and the connections and the resources and the expertise so that, like us, they can follow their own dreams. And it's really exciting for us at this point in our lives, having worked with technology for almost ever, to be able to help other women leverage technology to their advantage and make it easier for them to market themselves more effectively, to find new customers, and new clients. And, you know, we give the women in our community free web page, which some of them have websites and some of them don't, and it enables them to promote and market their businesses and ventures. And we have a new marketplace where women can sell their products and their services too. And we're very, very excited about that. And we're continuing to grow both online and off. And we have events and we have workshops and we have courses. And women who are our members can share their expertise and connect with other members in online and then in local communities. And so that's very exciting for us.
I just love the way that it seems that you took your own experience and your own kind of network within your own community and really expanded it to be a virtual community that can go way beyond anyone that might not be living in your area or a community mm-hmm. of experts that perhaps, you know, aren't in your own personal community. I think that's so clear that this grew out of something that was a need that you found in your own life as well as the lives of your friends and other women entrepreneurs, right?
Absolutely, and I think that's how most entrepreneurial businesses get started. It's filling a need and finding a way to do that really effectively, and that has been my experience in every startup that I've ever run. And also, for the women who are in our community. You know, they're all looking at something that's missing or something they wish they had, and that's driving their passion. And they're all doing something that they are really good at, and that's what makes them successful.
So give us your vision or your dream for this project. What will it look like 5 years from now if it's everything you hoped and dreamed of?
Well, our goal is to continue to support women who are launching and growing their visions and to continue to provide our members with the tools that they need, because an interesting thing that we discovered is that women over 40 are driving entrepreneurship, and there's 62 million of us online. And that is a pretty big market. And 40 is also the average age where women start their first business. So I want to support as many of these women as I possibly can. And to have our community just keep growing and expanding and to really become the go-to destination for anyone who wants to support women-owned businesses. And, you know, we'd like to become also the go-to marketplace with our new marketplace, which is a little bit of Etsy and a little bit of LinkedIn, where our own members can connect more easily with new customers and clients. And we just want to see that grow and grow and grow. And in order to do that, we want to find the right investors and sponsors and partners, people who share our mission, share our vision, and can really help us to scale our business and continue to grow and expand. So that's really my next kind of goal and dream, Sharon, is finding new partners that really can help us to build awareness, because there's so many organizations and companies out there that want to support women business owners and that have valuable products and services that our own members want and need, and we want to work with them. And also, I'm really passionate about our local communities. I've been running a community out in the Hamptons. We're growing a community here in New York City. And then my partner, Peggy's out in California, and she's growing our business out there with local communities, too. So I
let me ask you about that, Joanne, because I know your women business partner, lives and works 3,000 miles away from you.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting, I think, for other women to just hear how are you managing a coast-to-coast working business relationship with someone. You know, you're 3,000 miles away from each other, you're 3 hours time difference. How does that work?
That is a really good question, Sharon. Well, Peggy and I both started working the internet like way back in 1995, and we worked together at my first internet company, KidSites 3000. So we were funded by AOL, and we hired 4 people to start, and Peggy was part of that original team. So I've known her since 1995, and our working relationship has evolved over the years, most recently into a business partnership. And so, you know, we know each other very well. We're both very independent, and we have a wonderful collaboration. We respect each other's judgment. We trust each other. We were both TV producers, so we're really organized, anal, actually. And we're both very action-oriented, and we always have to-do lists. And since our business is computer-based, the distance doesn't really matter as much as you would think. So we connect almost every day by phone or by video when we really need to see each other. And we also use everything that's out there, obviously email, tools like Basecamp, Dropbox, Zoom videos, you know, all the media tools that are out there that make it really easy to connect and share stuff.
I love the idea that the network for women, you know, doesn't have any boundaries, and that you're creating something for particularly women over 40 who are looking at their next career or a new career or a new business idea, where perhaps they might feel isolated sitting in a small town or sitting in a community where they've been seen as X and now they're going to try to be Y, and that all of a sudden they'll have connections and support for that new venture. So, Joanne, I so appreciate you founding What Now, What Next for those women over 40 to really begin to connect and collaborate, and your marketplace where they can actually share their products and their services is another great resource that, again, is virtual. I just really want to thank you for being with us today. That's Joanne Roberts from What Now, What Next, and this is Dr. Sharon Ufberg on Force of Nature for 51%.
Dr. Sharon Ufberg is co-founder of the personal development wellness company Borrowed Wisdom. She blogs for the Huffington Post and lives in California's Napa Valley. We now go to the Valentine's Day story archives. In Afghanistan, a man and woman may meet each other for the first time at the marriage altar, and when the groom pulls back the veil and does not like what he sees, he can send the woman back, shamed and tainted, back to her family. To avoid such a fate, more women are considering plastic surgery in Kabul. Reporter Greg Warner has an intimate look at the fear that prompts this and the courage of one woman who is accompanied by the reporter into the surgeon's office.
Since she was 12, Benafsha was sure that if not for the shape of her nose, she'd be beautiful.
Mostly it was my sister that would mention it. When we got in an argument, she'd say, "Your nose is like the fist of a cat."
Benafsha is Hazara, the Asian-featured ethnic minority. In Afghanistan, the beauty standard is Persian or Indian. Straight noses are preferred.
Girls have to be beautiful for marriage. They can't have noses that are too flat.
As an Afghan woman, making a good marriage was pretty much her only option for having a decent life. When mothers of prospective suitors came to visit, they always scrutinized her nose. So the winter she turned 19, Benafshah collected $60 she'd saved, plus another $200 from her uncle, and took it all to a crumbling building in downtown Kabul. To a clinic, smelling faintly of formaldehyde.
This is the new operation room?
Yes.
Dr. Hamkar is the lead surgeon of Afghanistan's first and only plastic surgery clinic.
It's very primitive.
It is very primitive.
Primitive operation. The lamp is the...
A big green lamp from the Soviet era illuminates the operating table, while a row of kitchen cabinets are jammed with gauze and scalpels. The TV stuck in the corner plays that most psychedelic of American cartoon shows, Teletubbies.
This is something new.
That's Hamkar's assistant, Dr. Daoud.
In Afghanistan, especially recently, this year, we see some patients who come to have, for example, for mammoplasty.
That means breast,
to have a smaller breast.
Daoud blames Afghan television. Afghans went from no TV under the Taliban to a flood of movies and even fashion and style shows today.
It made the people to care about their physical condition, They say that I'll show you a picture of, for example, actress, Indian actress. They say, I want to look like this. But they think that it's possible to change their face at all.
They want a whole new face?
Yeah, because of some movies, I think, they've watched on TV, for example, American or Indian movies. They think that it's possible.
But Daoud says that most of the clients in his clinic don't come pursuing a fantasy. They just want a normal life.
For example, girls who have some problem on their face, and this is the reason why they cannot get married. There was a girl, she had some hairs, you know, on her face, and she was engaged. Her fiancé didn't know about the beard that girl had, you know.
Her future husband had only ever seen her in a burqa.
She said if he knows about it, she'll be divorced and it will be something very bad for her.
So she hawked her engagement ring, paid Daoud for the treatment, and by the time the burqa came off on her wedding day...
When her husband lifted off her veil for the first time and he looked at her face... Do you think he could tell that she had had surgery, or he?
No.
You think he just thought, this is my beautiful wife?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's afternoon when Benafshah, the first girl we met, comes in for her checkup. She's wearing a colored headscarf and pink nail polish, and proudly sports a cardboard cast over her nose. It's been 9 days since her nose job.
Actually, can you do me a favor? Can we look at the photo together?
Sure.
Is it okay?
I asked Daoud to call up the before photo on the computer, the original nose that her sister called a cat's fist. And as they do it, I can't help but notice that Benafshah blushes. When the doctors do show her the photo of her old nose, you can hear her voice is diminished, like she's lost her confidence. There's that old debate about cosmetic surgery. Is it a form of self-expression, or is it social pressure? Of course, it's both. We get the freedom to change ourselves, and we use it to look like everybody else. In Afghanistan, too, they're mixed together. The freedom to uncover, and the freedom to conceal.
The story was produced by BendingBorders.org as part of the Global Story Project, with support from the Open Society Foundations, presented by PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1437.